Hello, this is Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, April 17th, 2019. We'll start today's reading on the front page of the paper with the article, City Council OKs Budget. Hotel Motel Tax Increase Also Passes, by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. The Danville City Council Tuesday night approved a 2019-2020 budget that starts May 1st and includes a 1% hotel motel tax increase, with the city tax rate going from 6% to 7%. The council voted 9-5 for draft 2 of the budget, which totals $51.7 million, compared to last year's $50.9 million budget. The city also has had placed on public display a draft 3 budget that didn't include the hotel motel tax increase, but instead cut more money, such as from maintenance of parks and public property for the city pool, Harrison Park Clubhouse, and Danville Stadium. Those voting against the budget were Ward 6 Alderman Steve Nichols and John Cooper, Ward 7 Alderman Steve Foster and Lloyd Randall, and Ward 2 Alderman Rick Strebbing. This is not a perfect budget, Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said, adding that city officials, however, worked hard on it, and everyone doesn't want some things that are in the budget. The council voted on the hotel motel tax increase first with an 11-3 vote, with Randall, Nichols, and Foster voting against it. Foster said hotels could see jobs affected. Ward 4 Alderman Mike O'Kane said his reasoning to support the increase was to not take any more money out of the sanitary sewer and solid waste reserves for certain personnel salaries who work in the solid waste and sewer divisions. With the 1% increase, about $50,000 out of both is being taken, instead of closer to $200,000. There's more than $4 million in the reserved funds. Strebbing said he'd rather have seen a 2% increase. Randall thought the city should hold the line on the hotel motel tax. I don't think that's right, he said of the increase. It's not going to hurt Danville, said Ward 1 Alderwoman Brenda Brown. The new city budget also includes funding to revert back to police and fire chief positions, the elimination of a code enforcement inspector and public affairs position, $12,000 for First Fridays, and no $10,000 for Downtown Danville, Inc. Also Tuesday, the council initially voted 7-6 on a contract not to exceed $105,000, but estimated at about $89,000, with Sprague Lawn Care of Stateline, Indiana, for the mowing every 6 weeks of 239 city-owned and 278 privately non-city-owned lots for $29 each. That vote failed to receive a majority of council votes and was taken when Ward 3 Alderman R.J. Davis was absent from his seat. Randall, who voted no, asked for the vote to be reconsidered when Davis came back. Randall said he'd change his vote to yes for the best interest of the city. The council then voted 9-5 to approve the contract. Ward 4 Alderwoman Sharon McMahon and other aldermen want the city to look at cheaper options for the mowing. Interim Public Works Director Carl Carpenter said the city has enough mowers, but would need another couple trucks and trailers to do it in-house. He also said it'd take about 6 employees, paid at $10 an hour, estimating that labor would cost $60,000. We'll continue next with the article, Ready for Takeoff: Southview Students Learn to Fly Planes, by Carol Rome, Danville. Southview Upper Elementary School 6th grader Eric Biggs was all smiles Tuesday afternoon as he operated a flight simulator and experienced what it was like to be an airline pilot. Indianapolis-based LIFT, standing for Leadership in Flight Training Academy, landed at Southview with its mobile LIFT lab that is equipped with 4 virtual reality flight simulators. Southview students in all four of Matt Skovran's Project Lead the Way classes were able to experience what it feels like to fly an airplane during the hands-on flight school of sorts inside the mobile lab, which travels around the country to various events and schools. It gives the sensation of being in the air, Lyft Academy recruiter Zakia Stewart said of the flight simulators. Fellow Lyft Academy recruiter Shelby Tierney, who has been a licensed pilot since she was 18, said she was impressed with the Southview students' knowledge of aviation. Some knew about aviation and knew how an aircraft worked, she said. With the state-of-the-art flight simulators, the student pilots were able to go beyond what aviation video games offer. Students wore virtual reality glasses and headsets to fully immerse themselves in the simulated flight experience, which included trying to land his or her plane without crashing. I was panicking, but at the same time there were people encouraging me, Eric said. The comedic relief helped me to focus. River Jackson was one of Eric's classmates that supported him by standing over his shoulder and saying, "Don't crash! Don't crash!" River was enthusiastic about his flight simulator experience. "I loved it," he said. "It was fun." Sixth grader Idona Ajidi, however, found out firsthand what happens if the plane crashes on the flight simulator. "When you crash, it says, 'Ouch, that hurts,'" she said. Sixth grader Marcus Lesby admitted that he crash-landed too. "It would take a long time practicing before I could become a pilot," he concluded. The virtual reality flight simulators allowed students to discover whether aviation is something they would like to do as a job someday. Not only is the Lyft Lab a way to encourage youngsters to consider a career as a pilot, but also it further sparks their interest in STEM-related curricular activities and career opportunities. To be eligible for Lyft Academy, one must be at least 18 years old and have a high school diploma and a valid driver's license. Many Lyft Academy graduates work for Republic Airlines that flies regional jets for American, Delta, and United. Skovran's students each received a balsa wood glider and a comic book from Lyft Academy as souvenirs. Skovran said he met Lyft Academy recruiter Zakia Stewart at a Project Lead the Way event and knew he had to have his students experience the flight simulators. Part of the Project Lead the Way curriculum is aviation and the physical forces that make flight possible, he said. My students learn about the different parts of a plane, as well as different aspects such as lift and thrust, pitch, roll, and yaw. Skovran students also have made and tested paper planes to see which ones would travel the farthest, made balloon rockets and flew small drones, which his class received through a grant from the Danville Public School Foundation. Now we'll go to the article, Passion Play Presents Easter, Crossroads to Show Last Supper to Resurrection, by Christopher Morikel, Danville. 1 Corinthians 15 puts it pretty succinctly. If Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile and you are still in your sins. Crossroads Christian Church is making sure the community understands the importance of Easter as it more and more gets lost in chocolate bunnies and marshmallow chicks by presenting an Easter passion play. "It's been good for me to just take it in," said Crossroads administrative pastor Rob Ketcherside, who has played Jesus in the past, but will portray someone taking Christ off the cross this year. "It's another unique perspective, but just a small role. It is a somewhat symbolic action reminiscent of Mel Gibson using his own hands to nail Jesus to the cross in his film, The Passion of the Christ." "What a powerful thing," Ketcherside said. "Every time you watch what was created to know, this is what he did for me. Those nails went into his hands. The least I can do is put my hands there and show the world this is what Jesus did." Cast members, made up entirely of Crossroads Church members, will show the community in two performances, both at 6:30 p.m., Thursday and Friday. Admission is free and no tickets are needed. The play begins with the Last Supper and goes through Jesus' resurrection from the dead. The church's auditorium stage is set up with several scenes, including Golgotha, the Garden Tomb, Gethsemane, and others. The entire production will last about an hour. The script was put together by church member Julia Reynolds several years ago, and has had only minor tweaks throughout the years. Linda Smith is directing, with Jason Reynolds taking on the role as Jesus once again. Ketcherside said the cast is rehearsing 2 to 3 times per week, but will increase that to every day the week before the performance. The one caveat, Ketcherside said, was the violence done to Jesus, and that a parent should decide beforehand if a child could sit through it. The play is a musical, with a handful of songs and music that sets the mood. The church meets for regular services at 9 a.m. and 10:45 a.m. on Sundays, with a Bible study and kids program at 6 p.m. on Wednesdays. Call Ketcherside for more information on any of these programs at 217-443-4323. Visit the church website at www.crossroadofdanville.com or find them on Facebook. As far as the play, Ketcherside said a major effort is going into the production in order to share the Easter story. "There's a large group of people that are setting aside quite a bit of time to practice and put this all together," he said. "There's a lot of people involved." Next, we'll go to the article, "Police Increase School Presence After Threat," by Christopher Moracle, Westville. One person is in custody after making an inappropriate and threatening comment Tuesday morning at Westville School. The person made the comment in a meeting at Judith Giacoma Elementary at 200 South Walnut Street, and the district followed up with law enforcement after the individual had left. "Law enforcement did a fantastic job of making sure school safety is paramount," said Seth Miller, Westville School District Superintendent. "They came out to the school immediately just to make sure there was no potential opportunity for the situation to escalate or to go anywhere negatively. Classes were not disrupted, but there was a visible police presence at the school," Miller said. "Officials initiated shelter-in-place procedures, like they are trained to do." Westville police continue to investigate the individual and the nature of their comments, and said that the person is innocent of any crimes unless and until proven otherwise. Westville School District is extremely appreciative of the instant and overwhelming response by law enforcement to ensure student safety at all times. He also asked parents and students in a statement not to be alarmed at the visible police presence of law enforcement during the next few days. Police have told administration the schools are, and remain, safe. We'll go now to the death notices. Gary D. Dean Barnett, 58, of Vetersburg, Indiana, passed away on April 12th. Per his wishes, he will be cremated and there will be no services at this time. Memorials can be made in his family's name to Robison Chapel at P.O. Box 79 at 103 Douglas Street in Catlin, Illinois. Carol Katie Myers, 80, of New Richmond, Indiana, passed away on April 13th. Her family and friends will celebrate her life with a visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Friday, April 19th, at Friends and Family Funeral Home of Wingate, Indiana. Katie's celebration service will be at 11 a.m. Eastern on Saturday, April 20th. Graveside services will follow in Georgetown Cemetery at noon Central Time. The family asks, in lieu of flowers, consider a donation in her name to a ministry important to her, Through the Gate in Linden, Indiana. Michael McGovert, 35, a resident of Manitowoc, Wisconsin, passed away on April 13th. Memorial services will be 11 a.m. on Saturday, April 20th, at the Harrigan Parkside Funeral Home. Relatives and friends may call at Harrigan Parkside Funeral Home from 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturday. James Kenneth Kenny Wombles, 74, of Danville, passed away on Friday, April 12th. Private family services will be at a later date. Richard Lee Ziegler, 69, of the Yeddo, Indiana area, passed away on Monday, April 15th. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, April 18th, in Shelby Funeral Home of Covington. Funeral service is at 2 p.m. Eastern on Friday at the funeral home. Burial will follow in Centennial Cemetery near Yeddo with military graveside rites by the Petersburg American Legion and U.S. Air Force. The family requests memorials to the American Cancer Society. Martin I. Jones, 92, of Danville, passed away on April 15th. A graveside committal will be at 10 a.m. on Thursday, April 18th, in Sunset Memorial Park. Memorials in Martin's memory to the Danville Humane Society, American Cancer Society, or American Legion Post 210. C. Louise Berigree, 90, of Rossville, passed away on April 14th. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Thursday at Anderson Funeral Home in Hoopston. Burial will be in Rossville Cemetery in Rossville. Visitation from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Thursday at the funeral home. Elaine Bradford, 67, of Danville, died on April 5th, 2019. A celebration of life service will be at 5 p.m. on Saturday at GAO Grotto at 2400 Denmark Road in Danville. Darren E. Hightower, 57, of Danville, died on April 15th. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time. Robert Porter, 79, of Indianapolis, formerly of Danville, died on Monday, April 15th. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time. We'll now go to today's News Gazette for the article, Witness Says He Drove for Paid Hit, by Noel McGee. Danville. A former Danville man testified Tuesday that on August 1st, 2015, Glenn Torres paid him $200 to drive him around to look for two men he had been hired to gun down in revenge for a robbery and non-fatal shooting that occurred the previous day. Marquise Robinson also testified that late that night and into the next morning, he was driving Torres. Theodore Teddy Hill, one of the men Torres was looking for, and Zara Strickland, Mr. Hill's girlfriend, to Torres's car. As he was heading north on Logan Avenue and approaching the stop sign at Kimber Street, that's when the defendant shot Teddy, Robinson said. He shot him in the head, he continued, adding he heard a slight scream from Ms. Strickland and saw blood pouring from Mr. Hill's head. Robinson said Torres ordered him at gunpoint to drive to a location west of Danville, where he dumped the couple's bodies, and then onto his home on the east side of Indianapolis, where he tried cleaning the car a couple of times and tried to lay low. The testimony came on the first full day of Torres's murder trial for the August 2, 2015 shooting deaths of Mr. Hill, 29, and Ms. Strickland, 28. If convicted, the 30-year-old former Danville man could face 60 years to life in prison under special penalty provisions. For some news in local sports, we'll head over to the article, The Rule of Three, Thomas Wilson, Lead Danville, Past Central, Urbana, by Chad Dare. Danville. Things that come in threes are supposedly more humorous, satisfying, and effective than any other number of things, according to the Rule of Three principle. It was true on Tuesday afternoon for the Danville girls track team. Sophomore Haley Thomas and senior Amia Wilson each won three individual events to lead the Lady Vikings to a triangular victory over the Urbana Tigers and the Champaign Central Maroons at the Wayland Young Complex. The kids responded well. "We have a nice bunch of young kids to complement our older veterans," said Danville coach B.J. Luke. "Those older veterans are definitely Thomas and Wilson, both of whom were state qualifiers last year for Danville. Wilson has actually collected 5 state medals in the past 2 seasons, 3 second-place finishes and 2 third-place finishes." "It was okay for what it was," said Wilson. "I'm always hoping that for that breakthrough performance that I know will happen eventually. I didn't have too much competition to work against. I have to accept the day for what it was. I can always do better." Wilson said it wasn't a completely awful performance, and she knows what she needs to work on for future meets. "The long jump was a big disappointment," said Wilson, whose winning jump of 17 feet 4 inches was more than 2 feet short of her season best. "I definitely didn't jump what I would normally be jumping at this point in the year. This was my first time jumping on these pits, and it was kind of difficult. These boards are different than most other high school or college boards." All in all, Wilson said that Tuesday's meeting was a good workout as the Lady Vikings prepare for this weekend's Eastern Relays in Louisville, Kentucky. "Last year, I was really disappointed because I got 3 second-place finishes in my 3 events," she said. "I had the top seeds in all 3 events. This year, I want to improve and hopefully take home a couple of first places." Wilson's winning time in the 100 was 12.41 seconds, and in the 200, it was 25.09 seconds. Not bad, considering that both races were ran into a still headwind. That was also the theme for Thomas, as she won the 100 hurdles at 15.94 seconds and 300 hurdles at 51.66 seconds. "Considering the big headwind today, the times were pretty good," Thomas said. "The 100 hurdles wasn't what I was hoping for at all, but the headwind and the lack of competition, it wasn't a big deal. I hope to put up some good times this weekend in Louisville. Tonight was a good practice meet, and it should help get me ready for the big invitationals that we have coming up." The one definite bright spot for Thomas came in the pole vault. After a disappointing finish to her freshman year, Thomas dealt with an injury which kept her from competing in the sectional meet. Her winning jump on Tuesday, 9 feet 6 inches, ties her best from last year's outdoor season. "It's good to get back up to 9.6, she said. "It feels good to get close to my personal best. My best last year was 10 foot indoors, but it was 9.6 outdoors. I want to get back to 10 foot this year, and hopefully I can get to 10.3, which is state qualifying." In addition to the 6 victories from Thomas and Wilson, Danville also picked up wins from its 400 and 800 relay teams, along with Karina Mayfield in the discus, and Brigea Blaylock in the high jump. Luke is really pleased with his 2 sprint relay teams. "Our 4x2 800 is turning in a very strong relay. They are state rated," he said. "And our 4x1 400 is all underclassmen. Their time is dropping, and that will be a nice group for the future." Latora Baker, Natika Conway, and Kaimia Williams are both part of relay teams, while Lene Ward is on the 400 team, and Javia Williams is on the 800 squad. "We wanted to compete and win. The kids did a good job," Luke said. "We are really a stronger big meet team than we are a small meet team because of depth." We'll now head back to the News Gazette, where they will highlight a local Teacher of the Week. In the article headlined, "I Love to Instill Knowledge." If you stop by Rossville Elvin Junior High this week, you may catch Jennifer Reefsteck and her 8th grade math students chucking Barbie dolls over the top of the stair railing. The Barbie bungee jump is something we do during our Equations of a Line unit, said Reefsteck, who also teaches 6th and 7th grade math and is known for doing fun, hands-on projects to engage her students. For the bungee jump project, students tie rubber bands together to make a bungee cord, which they tie around Barbie's ankles, Reefstex says. Then they drop her from different heights. They plot their data in a graph to find a best-fit linear equation. They then use the equation to figure out how many rubber bands they need to drop Barbie from the top of the stairwell. The student who drops her closest to the ground without touching it wins, explains the teacher, who videotapes it all. Here's more about Reefstex. I became a teacher because I love to instill knowledge into students. When you are able to help someone understand math who previously struggled with it, there is great fulfillment. One of my favorite teachers growing up was Mr. Henry, because he had a knack for making math easy to understand. The teaching supply I can't live without is sticky notes. When it comes to my favorite tactic for getting students to pay attention, I randomly call on students to come to the board to answer questions. My favorite school lunch as a student was chicken and noodles. My favorite school lunch now is a cheeseburger. Something about me that might surprise my students is, I know how to play piano. I took lessons when I was younger. My classroom pet peeve is when someone interrupts someone else. If I weren't a teacher, I would be a pharmacist. And now for a couple of quick updates on what's happening in the area, we'll stop by the community brief section. Danville. Classmates to meet. The class of 1959 Lunch Bunch will meet from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Thursday at Jocko's Pizza Inn. Participants are asked to bring donations of personal care items for the dwelling place. Fundraiser set. A chicken and noodle dinner is set for 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. on April 29th at the Masonic Lodge at 109 West North Street. The meal will cost $8. Bob Jones will make his bread pudding, as well as peach cobbler and apple cobbler. Delivery available for orders of four or more meals by calling 446-7620 up until 4 p.m. and 446-9377 after 3 p.m. Proceeds will go to the East Central Illinois Dyslexia Center in Danville. Dinner scheduled. The Knights of Columbus at 310 Bryan Avenue plan a Lenten fish fry from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on Friday. The menu includes chicken or fish strips for $7 or breaded shrimp for $8. Children under 12, just $4. All are welcome. In Hoopston, support group to meet Thursday. Members of the Hoopston Breast Cancer Support Group will meet at 6 p.m. on April 18th at the Pit Stop at First Lane's Bowling Alley. For information, contact Pat Foster at 309-208-9829. In Westville, reenactment scheduled. The Vermilion County Conservation District will host the Stevens family, who reenact life in the 18th century, for the first time this year on April 20th through 21st. The Pioneer Homestead at Forest Glen will have 18th century furnishings. The event will run from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday and 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday. Admission is free. Call 662-2142 for information. That's all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, April 17th, 2019. Thanks for joining me.